Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today I want to welcome Tony Reinke to the podcast. Tony is senior writer for Desiring God and the author of 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You, Lit, A Christian Guide to Reading Books, and Newton on the Christian Life, To Live as Christ. He also hosts the Ask Pastor John podcast. Tony, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it, Dr. Allen. Thank you.
Yeah, listen, it's a delight to have you recording today. I would say in the studio, but you're in Minneapolis and I'm in Kansas City, so you're not in the studio. But listen, I got your book just a few weeks ago, I guess a couple weeks ago, whenever it came out, and quickly devoured it, passed it off to my wife, who enjoyed looking it over and reading it through as well. And it's just been a very helpful book for me personally. It has confirmed a lot of suspicions. It has given me ammunition why I should be more intentional about social media usage and phone usage and all the rest with family members. And anyway, this book is just quite a help and quite an accomplishment on your part. So thank you for the work.
Well, thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you. So thank you.
Well, I resonated with Dr. Piper's introduction or the foreword to it, where he wrote, you know, kind of said something along the lines of, this is a book I couldn't have written because you spent so much time researching and combing data and pulling it together. And every page just exudes that. This isn't a rant. This is a very nuanced, I think, biblical assessment of technology and of how we use our iPhones or our smartphone, and man, it's just very well done, and so I hope it gets a wide reading by a lot of people.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, and so today we're talking about the pastor and technology, a conversation drawn largely from the book, but also we'll venture in some way beyond the book. But before we get into it, just help us update us on your current ministry post, on what you're doing there at Desiring God, and just what's going on in the life of Tony Reinke.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to introduce myself. I've been in the Twin Cities now for 5.5 years, working for Pastor John and Desiring God. I serve as senior writer. That's my official title. And my background is in journalism. I went to the University of Nebraska, eventually earned a degree in liberal arts, but a strong emphasis on journalism. I worked in the print news industry in the mid to late 1990s, just as everything was starting to collapse. And decided to jump out of that field and back into residential remodeling, which is what my family background was in Nebraska. And then in 2006, I started a blog, which led to ministry doors being opened, which led to us moving to the D.C. area for about 4 years to work for an international denomination and to serve pastors. And then that led me to the Twin Cities. And we've been here 5.5 years. The Ask Pastor John podcast has been just really blessed by God. And we're like 1,050 episodes into this thing now. It's just been crazy. So it's been a lot of fun. I've been able to write some books, write some feature articles, and really use the journalistic training that God gave me even before I was a Christian to now be a nonprofit journalist in service of the local church. And so that's really where this book comes out of, is a desire to help Christians think through technology. And I think that's kind of my skill set right now, is just looking at where technology and media intersect the Christian life and really helping Christians to think through the issues. So that's really my focus now.
So the book itself, obviously, you wrote the book with certain needs in mind. You were seeing certain things, you were sensing certain things, perhaps culturally, perhaps personally, and it prompted you to give careful consideration. And so give us a little bit of the background. Walk us through kind of what was taking place in your mind and your heart that was the genesis for the book itself.
Yeah, it really started 3 years ago. I did an interview with David Wells, the theologian. And I noticed in some of his more recent books, he started talking more and more about the influence of technology on theology and on the Christian life in church. And I thought that was kind of unique, that technology was becoming more and more of something that he foregrounded in his books. And then in his most recent book with Crossway, he has large sections where he's talking about email and pinging, you know, smartphones. And like, I mean, this is a 70-year-old guy, 70-plus-year-old theologian talking about technology. And I realized at that point that something pretty significant was happening in the church through digital technology. And so I picked up the phone and called him and did a little interview with him. And the more we talked, the more questions he was asking of me as someone who was even more familiar with the smartphone. And I started to realize that the more interviews I was doing and the more I was talking with elders in the church about digital technology and what it's doing to us, the more questions were coming back to me. And so I was writing down these questions that I didn't have answers to and that I couldn't find answers to in some of the elder statesmen I was turning to. And it just said, you know what, these are questions that are pressing, they're relevant, they're important. Parents are starting to ask them, pastors are asking these questions, and it's time to really set out on an in-depth search and ask the question, what is the smartphone doing to us? Now, there's lots of studies out there that say that the smartphone is having a negative impact on our body. Obesity, posture, eye strain, breathing rate slowing down, heartbeat slowing down unnaturally. There's some weird things that happen when we're engaged digitally. And if you just pay attention to your body when you're really super engaged with a smartphone, like there's just some, your breathing habits change and your heart rate changes in ways that are a little bit alarming. But we all know that smartphones have changed us physically. The question is, what is the smartphone doing to us spiritually? And when it comes to the desires and the longings of our hearts, that's really what I wanted to press into and see, like, what is it that drives us back time and time again to our phones? And so that was the question that kept coming up over and over again. And so my interview with David Wells led to 24 interviews with philosophers and theologians and pastors and artists. And I just went down this list of trying to start answering the questions that I was starting to see.
You know, you think about one's phone, in particular, one's smartphone. And even as I've charted my own life the past 10 years, I've seen a certain evolution. And I remember when I first got my first cell phone, my wife and I were moving off to seminary, and this was in the early 2000s, and it made sense for us to have a cell phone as opposed to a landline phone. And that felt like a radical step to not have a traditional landline phone, but go with a cell phone.
Yeah.
It was just a little flip phone, and that's what we used. I never texted on it. And then in 06, I took a ministry position at Southern Seminary, and I got a Trio, I believe it was a Trio 600. And to me, that was just the coolest device because you could get email on it. And I was just kind of wowed by it. Then we got the Trio 650, and then I think it was the Trio 700. And then I guess about 2009, give or take, the iPhone came out. And it was more than a device to do email. You could, you know, access the internet. You were texting, you were emailing. Then you had navigation capabilities. And so many other things. And every one of these steps of progression, I found myself enjoying it more, becoming more dependent on it. And then one day I remember about 5 years ago, fantasizing to have that old flip phone back. And like, you know, if I could roll back technology and put the genie back in the bottle, I think I would almost choose to have only that flip phone, save one capability of the smartphone that I just find myself unable to live without. And that is the capabilities of navigation. And I guess just a little thought experiment here with you. Do you find yourself pining for less technology?
I do. And I hope this is one of the results of people reading my book. And that is that I think what technology wants us to do is to be impressed by the flashiness of what's possible rather than helping us think through what is necessary. And the only way we can determine what's necessary in our use of technology is to understand why we're here in the first place. And so a lot of the smartphone book is just helping my readers to step back and say, what is the purpose and goal of my life? Because technology is not going to answer that question for you. Technology is not going to tell you why you exist or whether you're doing what you should be doing or whether you're succeeding or failing. Life purpose will not be determined by technology. Now, technology can help you to achieve certain ends, but the goal of technology is really just to make flashy things look flashy so that you'll buy them, so that you'll use the features. And so if we don't step back and ask the question of what is my life purpose and what am I trying to accomplish, then we don't ever ask the question that you're asking right now, which is, what do I really need a smartphone for? And that's essentially a first question that we all have to ask. For me, you know, travel and navigation is, for me, the only reason I have a cell phone as well. I mean, I resonate with exactly what you're saying. If I didn't travel around and didn't need to know how to navigate foreign streets, I wouldn't need a smartphone. I could get by with a dumb phone. And so it's helpful just to sit down and list out what are the functions that I need my phone to do. And navigation is a powerful, powerful thing. Our smartphones can process more data. I think it's like 10,000 times more data than the 70-pound onboard computer on Apollo 13 that guided it to the moon. So you think of the computing power that it took Apollo 13 to get to the moon. You've got 10,000 times that power in the navigation system in your smartphone getting you to the coffee shop. I mean, that is absolutely surreal when you think of power. So that power can be used for very good purposes. But then you download some games, and now you're tempted to use it for gaming, and you're tempted to use it to watch Netflix, and you're tempted to, you know, on and on, waste time on social media that you don't have. And you've got all of these things that it can do, which is so appealing. The question is, what do we need our smartphones to do in pursuit of God's calling and our vocation, and what we need to do to succeed in those areas?
And I want to say again what I said at the beginning of the conversation. The book is not a screed. And in fact, I read the book throughout thinking, man, this is very well balanced. You're rightly raising questions. You're probing. You're helping to frame reality for us and what our phones are doing to us. But at the same time, you're not suggesting that, you know, we become Luddites. We go back to some previous generation, some previous era. And so I commend you for that. What does it say about us? And again, I want to kind of bob and weave in the book here and just kind of flesh some different aspects of this out. Here I would love to hear your reflection. I guess as a people, even within the church, what does it say about our own connectivity to human beings and all the body of Christ is to be? If our technology, if our smartphone, through how we use it, makes it virtually impossible for us to connect at the heart level with other human beings. And let me just flesh that out a touch. So I'm having dinner with someone just a few weeks ago, and their phone is going off so much, I might as well be having dinner by myself. And by that, I mean this. I don't mean an occasional ringing of the phone or a text message. I mean, they evidently had like every notification turned on their phone they could possibly have on through social media notifications and news notifications. And we're at the table trying to have dinner, and the whole time their phone is on the table, it's face up, and I'm seeing it nonstop illumine and vibrate. And it didn't so much as frustrate me, though it did, but it more made me feel pity for them. What does that say about life in the body of Christ, and to what degree is our technology actually hindering our ability to connect with brothers and sisters?
That's a huge issue. I mean, I think in future generations, our addiction to the smartphone screen is going to be a point of laughter. I think there's going to be pieces of artwork 10, 20 years from now just making fun of us holding our phones and staring at them. But I think here's where I think Scripture gets really practical and really ground, really down to the boots meet the ground level in Luke chapter 10, which is you have the sending of the 72. So you have this like broad democratization of the gospel spread, which is sort of a precursor to, I think, what we can do now in social media in getting gospel witness online. And those 72 are really kind of like an early example of sort of this gospel going out in a powerful way. And then later in the chapter, just right there in Luke 10, you have the parable of the Good Samaritan. And I think if I could just summarize and go right to the heart of that passage, I think what Jesus is saying is that you can be so distracted with even good ministry opportunities, like the priest and the Levite, who apparently had their mindset on their priestly or Levite duties at the temple. They were so focused on potential online ministry opportunities. We call it online in the sense it's remote, it's distant, it's something you can't see. The priest is running off to the temple. The Levite might be running off to the temple to, you know, for some preaching gig. They have these ministry opportunities that are remote, that are driving their attention, and they step over or step around the guy in the gutter. And so I think we can become so focused on viral possibilities that we lose sight of who our neighbor is. And what Jesus says there, and the Bible confirms this all over the place, is that our neighbor is the person in physical proximity to me. So I could be driving down the road. My neighbor is driving on the road with me. There's a physical proximity, a placedness that defines who my neighbor is. And I think a lot of Christians have, one, lost the fact that we are called to serve the legitimate needs and cares of our neighbors around us physically. They've got to put in our families, our wife, our kids, our neighbors in our neighborhood, our community. We have obligation to serve them with our lives. And I think we lose sight of that, and we jump in and we live in this virtual world where we're constantly having our attention brought off of the immediacy of what's going on around us, and we think of things that are remote and distant. And so I think we've just lost the definition of what Jesus lays out is what is it to be a good neighbor? And Jesus defines that in Luke 10. So I think just going back to that chapter is really, really crucial for all of us as Christians to reclaim and embrace the preciousness of what it means that God has put people physically around me at this very moment.
Tony, I hate to interrupt you here, but let's pause just for a moment for a word of update from Midwestern Seminary.
Midwestern Seminary's Doctor of Philosophy degree program is designed to equip leaders interested in building up the church. The PhD Biblical Studies program at Midwestern Seminary provides opportunities for advanced research and preparation in theology in an environment passionate about God's primary plan for the advancement of the gospel, the local church. Choose from multiple emphases and let your advanced degree open up new opportunities for ministry in our rapidly changing world. With our modular program of study, you can remain in your current ministry setting. But we've also recently introduced the residency, an experiential component to the PhD track, where local doctoral students receive one-on-one coaching and mentoring and a community context in which to bolster their studies. Get your PhD today for the church.
Okay, I'm back with Tony Reinke here talking about the pastor and his technology. Now, you begin the book talking about a theology of technology. And again, if you think about how much the smartphone especially has entered our lives, impacted our lives, shaped our lives, frankly, it's scary not to reflect on the utility of it and the theology of it as well. So can one really think theology about technology?
I hope so. That's really the only way that I can think of anything in this world is just setting it within the context of especially biblical theology. For me, that's just how I think. So before I wrote my book on literacy and writing, like, I just had to get a theology of books. Like how did God write books, and how does God publish books, and how do we engage in the written word? And like, because I think of the created reality that we get to live in each and every day as part of this sweeping worldview that begins with a creator who spoke it into existence, and it will be consummated in the recreation of all things. And we're smack dab in the middle of that. And I'm not post-millennial, but I do see this as one huge storyline that's awaiting the consummation of all things. And so when I think of technology, I have to set it within a broader context and a broader matrix. And so I'm going to go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, and I'm going to ask the question, like, what is the first technology, using technology in a very broad sense, what's the first technology we see? And we see textiles. We see the textile industry is born after the fall, and we see a flaming sword. We see there's a prototype of what swords will become. I mean, humans will see, oh, there's a sword that's going to carry on in human history, and humans are going to create swords because they see a sword there in Eden. God is introducing little pieces of technology there that's going to continue to flourish and blossom and become things that can be used for destruction or for human flourishing. And so when I look at technology, I think God has ordered his creation in two different ways that are very important to understand. One is that he has set natural laws in motion. So we have things like gravity, thermodynamics. That's just the way creation is, and God made it that way. And then the creator put into the soil, into this world, certain minerals and certain particles that can be, you know, melted into glass, and he put metals and precious metals and jewels. He put that into the ground based upon a scarcity and an abundance ratio that he determined was necessary. Then he put the image bearers out there to work it all, to cultivate the whole globe. And in those three priorities, what I see is that from that, technology emerges out of it. So technology in the iPhone is not necessarily some foreign alien thing that, you know, that came here by aliens from Mars and dropped the iPhone here. No, the iPhone is an aggregate, a combination of using natural laws, using natural materials that are melted, that are engineered by human minds into a technology that emerges from creation. So I don't see technology as being a foreign alien thing into creation. I see it as emerging out of it. Therefore, God is sovereign over the entire history of technology. That doesn't mean he baptizes all technology. It doesn't mean all technology is good. It just means that God is sovereignly orchestrating technology. Steve Jobs was not a mistake. He was not an he was not a mistake. I mean, he was gifted by God to take created realities and make something beautiful. We take that beautiful thing, that iPhone, and we can use it for destructive purposes or we can use it for human flourishing, but God is sovereign over all of technology. And so that's my point early in the book. And once you have that orientation, now we can talk about technology pros and cons and how we use it. But, you know, a lot of times I'm approached by someone who comes up to me and says, you know, I never owned a smartphone and I never will. And it's like they want affirmation from me to give them a high five. Like, that's the point of my book. That's not the point of my book. Like, they didn't read the book.
Right.
That's their takeaway. And so, yeah, biblical theology is how I orient on any topic. So no matter what I write about, I'm thinking big picture. I mean, we could talk about the Garden of Eden and the new creation and the technology and how it's going to develop in that realm. But, like, biblical theology orients how I think about anything in this world.
Yeah, and you outline that wonderfully in the book, and now here you verbalize it in a very helpful way also. Mm-hmm. You know, as I think about the smartphone and the utility of it, my mind races to an interview I heard a number of months back, a gentleman speaking about geopolitical realities, and he was kind of poking fun at George W. Bush, and he was reflecting back to post 9/11 and the war on terrorism, and he said, if you think about it, that's really a silly way to frame this engagement. To declare war on terrorism would be like FDR declaring war on aircraft carriers after Pearl Harbor. And he was brushing up against a very insightful point. I say that, and I bring that analogy forward here to the smartphone itself. Now, again, to be clear, you haven't declared war on smartphones. Your challenge is to think biblically about them. But when you think about the smartphone itself and the dangers that come with it, it's not just intrinsic to the smartphone. Some of it is the portal it is to the internet, the portal it is to social media, the portal it is to text and to email and these other components of it or aspects of it that bring disruption and different things into our life that may be unhealthy. So as far as the phone itself, the utility of it, here's my question. Why is it, if you think of the phone as a tool, as an instrument, as a utility, why is it, Tony, that we seem to have trouble putting parameters around it ourselves? In other words, I drive an automobile that, I don't know, I suppose could go 110, 120 miles an hour, but I'm never inclined to push it beyond 70 or 75. I have a gun or two, or actually several guns, and you can do a lot of things with a gun, but I've never really been inclined to do much of anything with it other than shoot at targets and occasionally hunt with it. We have a lot of instruments in our lives that have a full range of possibilities, but we seem to have the capability to rein ourselves in. The iPhone, though, it seems like so many Christians just have difficulty reining themselves in with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one anthropologist says what draws together video game addiction and social media addiction is the fact that we can simultaneously play the role of star and spectator. So we can be the star of our own world online, and we can be a spectator of ourselves and how others view ourselves. So if you're thinking of a video game, you think of someone can play Madden football, and you can be the athlete doing the amazing things, and you're watching yourself doing amazing things. He says social media is the same way, but it's a little bit, the time is offset. So you're publishing and you're being the star of your own autobiography, essentially online. But you're watching the social approval rise or fall based on what others are thinking and saying and replying in to what you posted online. So there's a star spectator dynamic that's happening. And he says when you bring the star and spectator dynamic together in real time, which is what video games are, they become the most addictive thing in the world. That's essentially what he's saying. He's saying social media almost does the same thing, which is a slightly offset time. It's almost like a dance, where you post something online and then you watch the approval, you watch the feedback, you watch for the validation in the moments following. And so you hit refresh because you want people to to like what you posted and to retweet it. And to, I mean, there's this social approval and validation factor that comes into play when it comes to social media. We get to see immediately what other people think of us. And that's what becomes so addictive, is that we want to be approved and we want to be loved and we want to be liked. And so we'll do anything for that validation. We'll post things that are funny and weird and strange and insightful and wise and maybe gospel related. We can even do it with Christian things and seeking of validation in real time. That is a lure that is so powerful. And that's what I'm trying to help Christians to break free from and see that their validation is in Christ, that their validation has to be rooted in something beyond getting a rise out of their online audience. And if that's what's truly motivating them to go on social media, that's not going to feed the soul. You're going to constantly be going back time and time again to get more and more validation. You get 1,000 likes today, and tomorrow you're going to wake up and you're going to need 1,100 likes tomorrow and 1,200 likes the next day. The validation will never satisfy the soul. And so those are the things I'm pressing into in this book and saying, what is it that draws us to our smartphones? It's that validation. It's that wanting to be liked, wanting to be loved, wanting to be shared, wanting to be validated in life that draws us back time and time again. And that's why it's so much different as a mechanism than just a television mounted on the wall. There's this star and spectator dynamic that's unfolding that is addictive. That's where the dopamine rush comes from. It's when we get the ping because we know somebody big on Twitter has interacted with something we posted. We want more of that, and we've got to break free from that.
And you share some alarming statistics and stories that make all of this clear and what's at stake very clear in most vivid ways. Again, this book is so helpful, Tony. Preaching and Preachers, a podcast oriented most especially well to preaching and to those who preach. And as preachers, as pastors, we not only are leading flocks and churches and ministering to Christians who are wrestling with how to utilize a smartphone in a healthy way, but we ourselves are people who must guard our hearts and be intentional about our technology. This has been a fascinating conversation. Boy, I wish I had you on for another episode. There's so much we could talk about.
Yeah.
But, Tony, listen, I just want to commend you for your book, 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You, and I want to commend it to our listeners. Make sure and grab a copy. You will be enriched by it. You will be informed by it, and I believe it'll be just helpful to you and those to whom you minister. Thank you for joining me for Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.